All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour. Happy New Year to everyone on the East Coast, those of you also in the Central Time Zone. Now, those of you on the West Coast, you've got a little less than 3 hours for that to actually take place. Or should I say 2 hours? Excuse me, 2 hours. We are a 3 hour difference, but we're an hour into it. So, readjusting my math for my dumbed down, American education, in less than 2 hours, it will be New Year's 2009 on the West Coast. Here we are. I'm, actually in two time zones and in two different years. It's a funny feeling. I've done this before, did this last year, during my first year of Evident Footprints, and so, this is quite a treat tonight. Considering that this is the last day of the year, or the first day of the new year, depending on where you are in the country, there is some news that came out, early yesterday, or we'll say yesterday morning, or this morning. I'm going to keep referring to the two time zones. From a former talk show host, and I say former because he was forced to pull his internet-based radio show off the air, Hal Turner, of the famous Hal Turner Show. Hal Turner released some very interesting information that we're going to talk about. I've not seen the documentation, but from the description of the information that he's gotten, it parallels my research, it parallels some other research that's going on, it parallels the story of the bailout, it explains fully well why we have a corrupt government, a corrupt Congress, Senate, a corrupt banking system, a corrupt media, on and on. And I'm going to be revealing some of those things for those of you who haven't heard about it. I was on the Rick Adams Uncensored Radio Free America show, which was guest hosted by Dr. Kasem Khalil this evening for about a half an hour, and I was sharing this information with him. And he's written a lot about 9/11 and has done some very wonderful research in that area, and immediately he knew that this information was likely true, that Mr. Turner has been given 400 megabytes of information, documentation of bribes given to our Congress, bribes given to our Senate, to our media representatives, to talk show anchors for TV show news anchors and reporters on the mainstream media to keep propagandizing what is going on. Now, these are very serious charges. Mr. Turner claims that he has the bank coordinates, the list of names, the offshore accounts, the names of the banks in the offshore accounts as well. He refers to places such as the Cayman Islands, Barbados, even the City of London. And that coincides with some information that came out recently through journalist and author Christopher Story regarding the 7,000 lockboxes in London that were raided by Scotland Yard and some 300 police officers, and they retrieved billions of dollars worth of money and jewels hidden in these 7,000 lockboxes, along with three very large room-sized vaults. And this is, again, an indication of money that has been reported on this show and in my journalistic works, as well as Christopher Story's work and a few other journalists around the country. It's been published in the Idaho Observer as early as in January of 2007. So here we are now, 2009. In fact, in a couple of weeks, it'll be the two-year anniversary of my first piece regarding Wantagate. This money has much to do with why the government is not doing anything related remotely to its responsibilities to the Constitution and to the laws that are created. And it lists, through codes, it lists the names of the senators and the congressmen and the media people and other individuals whose names will come out. Imagine 400 megabytes of this information is would easily fill over 400 novels. So this is a 6 to 9 year record, Mr. Turner has reported, and this is going to surface. Now, with that, I'm not going to waste any more time talking about that myself, but that is the background of some of what we're going to talk about tonight with tonight's guest. This will be the last show for those on the West Coast for the year 2008 and the first show of 2009 on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone with our guest. He is an environmental scientist. He is a health consultant, and he is also an herbalist and a very fine musician and music composer. His name is Michael Anthony. Michael, Happy New Year, and welcome to Evident Footprints, first show of 2009, or the last of 2008.
Happy New Year, Don. Always a pleasure to be on the show. Thank you.
Okay, Michael, now, can you make sure that your mic placement is optimal so we can hear you? It was a little bit...
How's that, Don?
That's better, yeah.
Better signal there?
Yeah, okay. That's good.
Great.
Well, you got to hear that news. What do you think about that?
Well, won't be surprising. Love to see it get exposed. So that all the Americans that are still naive enough to think that we have honest politicians representing us can get the rude awakening quickly. So that's great, but no surprise, Don. I mean, we know what's going on. These guys in Congress and Senate have been living lives of no like royalty. That's really how they view themselves now. And they actually believe they're above the law, and unfortunately, some of them may even believe that they're helping our country, even though they're selling us out the whole time.
Yeah, they're treating themselves as if they're nobility, and I had a feeling you might even say that word, but then I thought of a new word we can coin. Why don't we call it no-ability?
Yeah, I was going to say nobility, you're right. However, that's too dignified a term. I mean, they want to consider themselves noblemen, and of course, they're not noble in any way. And but yes, no ability is...
That's a good one, huh?
Much more appropriate for that.
All right, well, we'll have to use that a couple of times tonight, just so it sinks in. So the members of the no ability now have... But according to these records, there is substantial documentation. The names had to be from the descriptions that Hal Turner gave, there was an initial posting on his blog site. Okay, since he doesn't have the radio show anymore, he had to basically just get this message out there, and he alluded to the fact that some of these names were written in a code, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I find that extremely interesting that they went to the effort of putting the names in the code, and yet you could Google those words on the internet, and the names came up.
Really?
Yes. Now this precipitated with a 3:12 a.m. phone call to Hal Turner. He lives in New Jersey. So he got this call from Israel, and the man there was quite upset about what was going on with the government. I think it was about two nights ago on this show we were discussing the number of deaths that the media reported, and they keep saying 300 people were killed, but they keep showing images of bombs going off and buildings being destroyed. The internet is laden with images of children that have been maimed by these explosions, and it appears from the injuries that either these bombs exploded in their faces or they've been exposed to chemical weapons or something along that line. It's very, very sick looking and, you know, very sad what you see. Now,
sure.
That said, this man said that because the Israeli government wouldn't stop the bombing and that he decided to release this information. He is considered a knowledgeable insider as to what's going on with these bribes. We give these $3 or $6 billion loans to Israel, and that money is funneled back into the campaign funds as a way of getting it into the hands of the politicians. Now, these would automatically be illegal campaign contributions, but they're pocketing the money, and the coordinates to the offshore bank accounts are included in these ledgers. Can you imagine 400 megabytes of information? That is a lot.
Well, you see, they definitely have a racket going, and now we're being provided with some of the specific details on that racket and how they operate. And that's just great to have, verifying what we knew all along. They have a racket going. And it's definitely criminal, definitely treasonous, and I just hope we have accountability.
Mm-hmm. I sort of made a sort of just an intuitive stab at what the death toll was, and I said something, paraphrasing what I said, that's probably in the neighborhood of 3,000 people. It's usually 10 times what they report in the media. And of course, now we know that they've been bribed, that key people in the media, the anchors and news directors or editors have all been bribed. So they're going to keep the figures low. They're not going to tell us the real reasons. In fact, I watched one such report tonight just to see how they were reporting it. And if you listen to what they're saying, they gave you no substantiation for any of the voiceover description of what we were seeing or why we were seeing the images we were seeing. They just spewed this propaganda line. And so in light of these revelations, the gentleman that forwarded this information to Hal Turner included the verbal description, because it wasn't in the documentation, that over 2,000 people had been murdered, as far as he knew, and that the numbers are still climbing, and the Israelis themselves have made a statement that they intend to do this until their goal is achieved. Now, what might that be,
mm-hmm.
do you think? And you don't have to answer that.
Well, they have...
you know, they didn't state it themselves, so...
Sure, sure. Well, they clearly have two objectives. One for their own country. That's the restoration of their temple and get the animal sacrifices going, which is so absurd. But nonetheless, that's what their entire motive is. And for everything they do there. And here, their motive is to retain full influence and control over our government so that we continue to fund them with a lot of money. I mean, we're talking billions a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we know those are the two main interests of theirs on their plate for an agenda.
Yeah. Now, you know, this money is described typically as a scheme where they send, and I've stated this before, but just for the listeners that just joined us or to underscore what is going on here. If this is true, and I have no reason to think that something this serious would not be reported. He says that the U.S. Congress votes to send $3 billion to $6 billion of free cash to Israel every year under the guise of foreign aid. When the money arrives, the Israeli government takes several hundred million and puts it aside to be sent back to the USA through Jewish political action committees and donated to the political campaigns of the congressional members most friendly to Israel. By funding Israel, certain members of Congress actually guarantee they'll have enough campaign cash to get reelected. No one investigated it because there was never any way to prove what was being done. This morning, that changed. Then he says, and I'm reiterating something that I alluded to in my introduction, the Israeli who called me is personally disgusted with his government's ongoing attacks against unarmed civilians in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. He says the bombing of civilians has been far worse than reported in the media, with at least 2,000 dead and 10,000 injured. And, of course, this is still going on, so those numbers are already history. He had hoped that the Israeli government would call a truce, but minutes before he called me, the Israeli cabinet refused to order a truce. He told me, when I heard they refused the ceasefire, I knew my government was nothing more than a group of murderous butchers. I can't live with myself if I stand by and do nothing. So he called me and has blown the lid off the money laundering and bribery that I have reported on for years. That's Turner making that claim.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he has reported it, but he's not the only one. And I just want to make that point clear. There are a number of talk show hosts and journalists who have been reporting it. You yourself know, sure. I have been on a mission. So.
I'm sure Scooter Libby's at the top of that list of
bagmen
over here.
Yeah. Now, you know, I've been looking at the real estate, and much of the description he has, and I'm right now just referring to the first go-around of this that went out. He did three additional updates on his website as he began looking at the documents. He described some of the things he was seeing. And I can definitely make a correlation to the research that I have done very recently. In fact, some of this went into parts 4 and 5 of the Three Stooges Go to Washington, the money laundering that's going on through the real estate. So, with bribed politicians, do you think the bailout is really what we've been told it is? Can anyone draw that conclusion?
You know, there's no way, just based on the fact that we're bailing out large corporate institutions that have totally mismanaged their funds, and now the taxpayer is going to cover that loss. so that what? They can continue on living the very luxurious lifestyle at our expense? It's outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the bottom line to it. In addition, when the government's bailing out, that means that the government is taking over control as well. Even though they're going to make us pay for it, the government's going to control it. And that isn't good for free enterprise, that's for sure. They should let any business, if you mismanage, you lose money, you have to fold up. Hey, that's how it goes. And yet, they're allowing them to continue on. So we have a bunch of either inept fools that don't know how to manage their own businesses, yet they're dealing with millions and billions of dollars, so that doesn't add up. So you would naturally think there's a lot of clandestine activity going on with this money. And then, as it all disappears, because it's all lining pockets of them, their buddies and themselves, that's where it's ending up, of course, we're going to cover that loss. It's outrageous. It's totally ridiculous. And obviously, our congressman and Senate is going along playing ball with them. So we've been sold out, Don, and there's no getting around that. Nobody can argue that one. And I'm just waiting for accountability.
Mm-hmm. Now, this brings us to a point where, I mean, you know, we can spend the whole night talking about this, but we're not really going to prove anything until these documents actually get released. But it sends up a red flag, or it sounds an alarm that, hey, this is their system that they created to control us, and look at what's happening to it. It's being exposed for what it really is. Now, are we going to once and for all finally wake up to the fact that this is all based in corruption? That if these people can be corrupted, and they're creating laws that are sending people to prison and destroying families and causing people to lose their homes, causing people to lose their savings, causing people to lose their pensions, is it going to register eventually with the people that this is nothing but organized crime? That
you think it would register, Don? And I'm glad you covered that, because again, there's the outrage, all that money supposedly going to them to help get the economy going, which it's not going to happen that way. They want to get the economy going. Hey, bring back our good jobs, our high-tech jobs. Bring them back, traders. Let the Americans who created that industry get their jobs back so we can get an affluent society going here again. And so along with that perspective, you also have the fact that instead of giving them all that money, if they want to give a boost to the economy, rather than give it to these people who mismanaged millions and billions already, give it to the Americans themselves in the forms of major tax breaks so that they can manage to cope in this incredibly hard economic recession that we're in right now, which is really, I mean, on the tinkering of the depression.
Yeah, I agree with that, and what I'm sort of suggesting or hinting at here, Michael, is that, you know, we've been talking now for the past 2 months about solutions, and we're entering a phase now. I mean, we're in it now. We're in 2009. Get ready, the wheels are going to start turning. On a cosmic level, on a universal level, things are going to really pick up the pace. And it's not that it's happening according to the calendar per se, but the calendar is what it is because of many unseen things, that the average individual doesn't pay attention to. As we look at what's going on in the total reality of of the whole universe. The corruption doesn't stop the universe from operating like it operates. And I'm sure that there are tons of places, probably millions of planets, where there is similar corruption to what is going on here on Earth. They're not all, not all planets are corrupt. That's not what I'm saying. But there are certainly more than just this one. In fact, the same individuals that have made this one corrupt have corrupted other planets prior to coming here and after coming here. So what I'm getting at is we're at a place now where we have the option, because this is falling apart. Are we going to try to save it, or are we going to try to get rid of these people and carry on with their own system? Or would it be more fruitful and more intelligent to create something new, to really consider what our options are? Nature tells us exactly what we must do. Nature's got it built into itself. It doesn't need man's guidance to take care of itself. I don't see many birds other than pigeons in a park asking people for food, or asking people how they should go about getting their food, or how they should procreate and multiply and exist. They have it inbred in them. It's innate, because they're in tune with nature. They're in tune with the creation because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we take this opportunity and study, or at least develop an appreciation for that? Now, I know you are a strong proponent of honoring nature and animals and plants and the like. So we need to look at ourselves as part of that. We are part of it, and so I'm trying to now lift this conversation to a higher vibration, a higher level, where we can consider things that that we might do.
Yes, Don, absolutely. I mean, we wouldn't be in this real dilemma if modern man had retained his natural ability of living close to Mother Nature. We just wouldn't be in this mess. Americans wouldn't be as sick, number one. So therefore, they wouldn't have as much need of these modern doctors who then hook them on their drugs, their prescriptions, which are simply drugs, which then add more health issues, health problems, as they use those products. And we'd also be understanding the harmonious relationship that everything in nature has that you just alluded to. And when you understand this harmony, then everything is more efficient in all of your activities. You find that everything becomes much more efficient, much more organized, much more streamlined, and that really means simple. Keeping everything simple instead of so complicated as it all is now. Everybody's worlds are complicated, it's all complicated, and that's the catch. We want to keep things simple. And as we do that, then we'll find that a lot of these complexities that are causing all kinds of problems will start to disappear.
Yeah, the complications you speak of and the simplicity you speak of are things generally in their natural state. When one looks at the entirety of nature, it's obviously a very complex set of circumstances that are operating at the same time, but in concert with each other, harmoniously. And we look at certain events like an earthquake or a flood as a destructive event, but often that's nature just adjusting itself, responding to what we do or to what we think or what we say or what we don't do or think or say. So every action or every non-action is still a positive action. There's something that's done. Now, the consequences of certain positive actions can be negative. Nature has her own way of correcting that. The species in nature, whether plant, animal, fauna, forest, seem to adapt, and where nature is in distress, it's because of something that man has done. Man spills oil by the millions of gallons or barrels into the ocean, and it kills unnaturally a large number of living creatures of all types. And then we eat the food that survives that, or the creatures or the substances, the plants that survive that, and we ingest the toxins. And we have the same people that are causing those, what are referred to as disasters. We eat the foods that they have, their waste products of the things they sell, in our medicines and in our foods and in our packaging and even the very utensils that we use to transport those items or eat from. And I'm speaking of plastics and wrappers and all mm-hmm. the different things that they make.
That's well, right.
I had Dr. Bill Deagle on the show this past year, and I actually had done a year ago about this time, right about this time, in fact, I had done a CD with him, which was about a 2-hour talk on the issue of the pharmaceutical industry and the nature of what is being peddled to us as medicines. And he basically described everything as toxins. And trapped in this matrix of belief, we think because we're told by the doctor or we're told by the person that we don't see talking on the TV commercial or in the radio commercial or in a magazine ad or a newspaper ad or things that are mailed to us in booklet form that these things are going to make us well, and they never quite do they? They compound the illness and the sickness.
Most of the time, that's what happens simply because you're ingesting foreign synthetic compounds that are foreign to the body, can't be digestible, and therefore foreign. And that's why they have adverse ill effects. And it's so simple, and yet they still deny it, which is quite incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the science is so simple. And so, yes, if we just stay close to Mother Nature, live off the land, and try to consume food locally as much as possible, and no question about it, there's not as many growers and food production around like there used to be, and that's all by design. And so, therefore, we have to grow as much as we can on our own, start learning it. Don, you're an avid gardener. I am as well. I have my own organic sprays that I developed, and they work wonderfully. And so, for all those that haven't pursued this yet, they have to start, because in time, they're going to cut us off even further from quality food. And we all must resort to our own individual abilities of providing it as much as we can for ourselves, and canning for the winter seasons with your surplus. And that's just the old way of doing things, and always had been that way, just up to very modern times, as we've allowed ourselves to get removed from Mother Nature and be more urban-like in our dwellings and totally disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the primary approach as far as general health goes. And then if there isn't, well, again, you should go to Mother Nature. Where else do you go for a safe, and also effective remedy that will enable the body to restore itself, because simply that's what's happening. The body has the ability to heal itself if it's giving the opportunity. And the only way to give it the opportunity is to go to Mother Nature and provide the body those herbs which are medicinal foods for the body. And there would be there would be hardly anybody really ill out there if we were just living this simple way. We could still be very advanced technically with technology. I'm all for that. But we still have to live simply and stay close to Mother Nature. And that's where we lost the balance. We bought the big lie, technology's our savior. And that they're going to find the magic pill one day. This one pill's going to do it all. And it's never going to happen that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we have all these dichotomies in terms of what they tell us. Our society is based upon what makes our country great, what makes our country strong. We were, in the last century, we were told that we were an industrial society. We were an industrial power, the greatest on planet Earth. And that may have been true, but none of it belonged to us. We thought it did because we were lied to, and we're still being lied to about it. And in the area of food, which you're talking about, or medicine, or healthcare, and those things, everything has fallen prey to this ruse that now we are in an information society. This is just a further strengthening of the matrix, in that in the destruction of the industrial complex, it destroyed the physical or the material aspect of society. And now thereafter, the mental society or the mental aspect of society. What are they doing with the information age? They're suppressing the information, are they not?
As always.
Yes. So,
they're suppressing the true information
mm-hmm.
that would provide people freedom. Once they, knowledge is power, never forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we have access to the information regarding the truth on any given topic, we then have power in that over that topic, and also we're given freedom, because once we have awareness as to how something is, it now allows us to have a freedom that we didn't have before, because we know how to relate to that given topic, how that particular subject impacts us, and therefore we're aware of it all, and therefore makes us free. For example, pharmaceutical medicines are synthetic drugs. That's a fact. That's truth. And so they usually, every time, make you ill. That's a fact. That's truth. Now, that knowledge gives you power, because now you are aware of this, and we have the control as to whether or not to have use of that product. And if we use this knowledge correctly, it'll give us the freedom of staying healthy, because we won't ingest those kind of substances that make us ill. And so that's how it works in every field. We just have to know the truth, and then it will empower us and make us free. And so therefore, they don't want us to have access to the truth. So the information that they're drowning us with is all the debased information, usually, that's going to trap our senses and things like that, and prevent us from thinking and becoming more intelligent.
Or our emotions. Now, in that sense, food, if you look at, when you think of food, and imagine yourself going out to a place where you work, whether it's an office or a factory or a warehouse or some institution, and they're not specializing in food in most of those places, so you eat where? If you haven't taken your food with you, and most people find that inconvenient, right? So they go to where they are offered convenience.
There you go.
And I remind the listening audience that the word convenience begins with the first syllable, spells out con.
Yes.
There's a little clue in that word. Okay.
Yes, and that con is that they're taking you into their confidence. Here, it's convenient and it's nutritious, and there's the catch. It may be convenient, but it's definitely not nutritious, wrapped up in all that plastic.
Well,
sitting on the shelf for who knows how long.
And the word inconvenience, it begins with in con. So
yes.
Either way, you're getting the con. You're being conned.
They got us coming and going, don't they?
Yes, exactly.
But nonetheless, for sure, you know, just think 30 years ago, who would think that when they're going to the gas station to get, you know, a toxic fuel like gasoline, they're also going to grab some coffee and breakfast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Today, they do it all the time, and it cracks me up. How can you get food, any kind of nourishment, at an establishment that's selling toxic, volatile substances? I wouldn't want my food anywhere near that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have that cream-filled pastry that resembles a hot dog, okay? And then they started selling hot dogs, too.
Yes, sure. They got it all now, don't they?
And they can cook it in a microwave. They can bombard it with microwave energy that cooks, even while you're ingesting it, it's still cooking inside your body. I'm sure that that's very healthy for the natural state of the body, too.
Well, there you have the reasons why the Americans are so unhealthy and out of shape, because those kinds of foods, which are really chemical foods made in a laboratory, not grown on a farm, and so therefore because they lack any kind of nutrition, then the body goes soft. Just goes soft. The skin, everything just goes soft. And that's the reason why the Americans fell for it in general. But they got us caught up in the fast-paced lifestyle, Don, as the method to get us hooked on their fast convenience of foods,
mm-hmm.
right? All by design, so that the Americans get into the condition they are in now. All by design. But again, you know, the mind that's thinking and attentive realizes, that's aware, has empowerment, is aware of the game, and I just laugh when I gas up and I see people buying food. It's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't touch anything in those places where there's gasoline sold. No way.
Now, it's interesting, too. Here we are now at New Year's, first day of the new year, and you're getting close, West Coast. You're getting very close. The scuttlebutt in the media is, well, so-and-so decided that they're going to give up using pencils this year, or another person is not going to wear any items made with fur, and this person is going to stop eating at fast food restaurants, and this one is going to lose 150 pounds by investing in a treadmill and spending 15 or 20 minutes a week trying to burn off a few calories. Now, we have all these different oaths that we make, or at least they only talk about that at New Year's. You know, well, they call it that because it's a New Year's resolution. The programming is there that everyone has to consider changing something about themselves. Just because it's a new year, we don't change
right.
anything any of the other 364 days in the year. Of course, I'm leaving leap year out, but don't you find it a bit strange that we're so willing to buy into all these things as if they're really valid? I mean, there's no validity to it at all. Why don't we hear someone say this? And maybe this is the first time anyone has ever said this on New Year's. Why don't we all make a New Year's resolution that we are going to become conscious individuals, that we're going to become powerful individuals. We're going to reclaim our sovereignty, our freedom, and we're going to opt out of this illusory system on this prison planet called Earth.
I will assume control over my life rather than let my government and strangers try to control my life. That's the resolution Americans have to make. Just get back to the way the original Americans were, independent. We didn't need anybody except ourselves and the American spirit. Neighbor helping neighbor when they needed help. They pitched in. It's a beautiful thing. And, you know, like during the first depression, when you talk with the people that survived through all that, and you learn that in those days, most people were very poor. And the only people that really felt the depression were city dwellers because there was no food there. But everywhere else in the country, it was still rural, farm, agricultural. And they had no money. They never did. They were poor in money, but rich with food because they had land and they always had food. So during the Depression, I met a few people that always said the same thing, that grew up on a farm. We never had a depression because we never had money to begin with, and we ate every day, as always, and we fed many people that didn't have anything all through the Depression. And we have to get back to that so that only city dwellers take the hit when they crash the dollar, but everybody else will be connected to nature, living off the land, providing their own sustenance as well as their neighbors, helping each other out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they got us away from, Don. Very cleverly got us away from that, and we are now what we are. Very self-absorbed individuals and totally disconnected from the American heritage and Mother Nature. God's way of living, off the land. So you have independence.
Now, people fail when they make these resolutions, and it really doesn't matter which one. In the greater sense, these are all illusions too. In other words, if you think that you are changing who you are by losing 150 pounds, I'm not saying don't lose it. If it feels like that is the thing that you choose to do, that's the thing you intend to do, then make that decision and stick with that decision, but don't become so insecure about it, because buying into the insecurity that others would put upon you, maybe out of ego, out of jealousy, it's just a perpetuating or a revolving carnival ride of illusions, and we move from one illusion to the other illusion to back to another one, and maybe returning to the first one and carrying two or three of them on our backs or on our shoulders at the same time, and never really getting the gist of what we're saying here is that it may be inconvenient to have to pay attention to doing those things that you so much would like to do, that you've decided that it's important to your health, to your longevity, to take care and pay attention to what you eat and that you get some exercise, not because of how you look or how you feel, but what impact it has on who you are and what you do, because carrying 150 pounds of extra weight that serves you no purpose is probably going to prevent you from doing a lot of things that you could do if you didn't have it. And it's not just weight. People are carrying these things around in their heads too. Belief systems that are very disempowering because they've been told that this is the best thing on the planet. that the government and the country and the economy and all the things that society has to offer in this matrix is the best of it, so don't complain. Or they say, well, you're not doing something right if you're not happy with this, because all the other sheeple, the dumbed-down sheeple, are quite satisfied with it. Sitting on the couch, watching the images flashing through a piece of glass.
Yeah, and the boob tube, yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's just hilarious how people waste their time on that. I mean, if you're watching a movie or sports, you know, there's something you definitely want to watch to be entertained or catch up on a sport, fine. But to idly sit in front of the tube when, you know, you're not really watching anything of interest, you're just wasting time, killing time, wow. Oh, boy, they got you. They got you right where they want you because mm-hmm. you're wasting time.
Well, you know, some people watch comedies, and I'm not saying I don't like comedies. I'm inspired by listening to a comedian who is actually looking at life and describing the insanity of it. It can be very funny, and yet at the same time, it can be very sad. You can get caught up in the drama of the description of what people do and how their lives move from moment to moment and how we interact with each other. Or you can look at the fact that we, while all this is going on, we have no consciousness really of who we are. There's really no purpose in life other than to have others make us feel good, or others provide for us, or others offer us things that we're told we need to be a certain way. In other words, it's just one set of illusions after another, all created to support each other, to sustain themselves because of the power that we relinquish when we buy into that, when we accept that as reality.
That's right. That's right. This is, it's all programming, and they rely on the TV as well as commercial radio, but TV primarily with the added visual effect. That's what they do. They program us into that mode of living, which is obviously not very conducive for a long, healthy, prosperous life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they want it.
Yeah, can you recall a time, Michael, when you were a child and your family went possibly on a vacation or to, maybe just a weekend someplace, to a lake or to the ocean or camping or something? And what did you do while you were riding in the car? You know, did you look at the scenery that you passed?
Sure.
Did you maybe read a book?
Yes.
You occupied yourself with something. You may have even played a game.
Sure.
By yourself or with a sibling, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Always kept yourself busy, studying something, either observing the scenery, enjoying it, or reading, or, right, just conversing with the family and or playing games along with on the ride. Absolutely.
Oh, now we have TVs, and we've had them for a long time, and then... And DVD players, and, you know, before that it was video cassette machines, that would occupy the kids. And so the parents said, oh yeah, that's great, because they're hypnotized by the movie or by the program that they're watching, and they're quiet, and that's convenient, never caring really about what was going into the minds of these mm-hmm. kids, how they were being programmed. Mm-hmm. And they don't just have them hanging on the ceiling or near the the little hump in the back seat on the floor.
Yeah. Sure. The drive shaft.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Normally, it's the path of the drive shaft that causes
right.
that hump, right?
Right?
Mm-hmm. But also, now they have them on the dashboard or hanging from the ceiling in the front.
It is amazing.
In between the passenger and the driver's seat. okay, yes. to make sure everybody in that vehicle can be exposed to the...
Fully distracted.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, fully distracted.
And so now you don't even really see where you're going, or you don't hear where you're going. It's inconvenient, there's that word again, to have the windows rolled down and hear the sound of nature or the wind blowing up against the vehicle, because it covers up the sound of the audio, and it disturbs the TV viewing. It disturbs the programming. So we've now cut ourselves off from nature. It's, you might as well be in an iron lung or in some kind of biosphere, moving yeah. around on a skateboard, you know, because you've lost that connection. Now, when you get to your destination, what do people do? They make sure they have a portable TV and the radio and video games is another thing. You want to talk about the programming and the toxicity of the mental body by these predetermined thought forms and all these emotions that are designed to control us. It's
all about control, Don.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, they've created a counterfeit system, and they got us to gradually accept it, and now they got us right where they want us. We are really under their control in just about every respect, but it's easy to break away from. Just don't cooperate. Don't participate. Recognize it for what it is. Watching TV when you're not really wanting to watch anything, to get entertained or to study, learn something, just want to waste time. Don't waste the time.
Mm-hmm.
Do something. Do something physical or intellectual, mental, to develop yourself. Always continue working on yourself. You see, Don, that's why we are here, to work on ourselves. And they know that. And they're constantly interfering with our God-given destiny, the right to be healthy. They interfere with that. The right to develop spiritually. Well, they don't want that. Can't have Jesus during Christmas. Can't have God mentioned anywhere. And at the same time, just in general, working on ourselves so we're better people as an individual. I want to be the best I can be as a guy, as a person. So I've been always working on myself. Trying to improve my nature, eliminating, correcting defects, whether it's physical or spiritual defects, working on myself all the time. And that takes time and energy. So you can't waste your time and energy by allowing yourself to idly get caught up in their system, which is going to rob you of your energy and time as they just make your mind mush.
Mm-hmm.
And so all we have to do is just break away and get back to the natural way of living and always use your spare time for noble pursuits of bettering yourself.
Yeah, and then there is, now as I'm listening to you, I can hear the people out there thinking, but I don't have any spare time. You know, I don't have time to do all the things that I have to do, let alone set aside some time for myself. And really, if it's not for you, then who is it for? The problem is very easy to see, or the circumstances that you're in are very easy to recognize if you ask yourself that question. If you don't have the time to do it for yourself, what is your time being devoted toward that
God. That's
you
right.
make? You make that distinction.
Absolutely, Don. That's so apropos for, you know, hey, if you don't think you have enough time, break it all down. Write it on paper what you did every hour of your day. And then you'll see where you're wasting plenty. Sure, they got us in a rat race system, and the rats are winning. That's for sure. However... Don't you love that one? That's from an old buddy of mine back in the IBM days when we used to say, it's a rat race in there, you know? And he would always say, yep, and the rats are winning. And I said, that is classic. And so that's the system they got us in. So,
well, when you asked me if I don't you love that one, I wanted to say nah, but
and so, you know, so we have to participate a little bit. I've got to get gasoline in my vehicle. I've got to buy their vehicle because I don't have any other options. So we have to participate in those ways, but that's it. Otherwise, don't participate. Utilize your time more efficiently, and you'll see how much you regain in your life for your own self and your own family.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have this general rule, and this is to cultivate discipline and interest, you know, a certain amount of devotion with my music students. And I've mentioned this on some other shows. It's worth mentioning again because it's not just for learning to play a musical instrument. You know, there are teachers out there that tell students, well, you know, practice 15 minutes a day. That's enough. Whoever started that should be shot.
That's
or
right.
Tarred and feathered. Let's be a little
least,
more kind.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
that's more appropriate.
Because it takes 15 minutes just to warm the instrument and warm the body up, facilitate all the mechanisms of technique that have to be activated, and then you have to apply that and begin learning something, and it's through the doing that the learning is acquired in music. It's not just something that I say, well, do this, and if you do this, then you're going to be a musician. Kids have been allowed to take this shortcut that they want to play songs before they learn to play the instrument. You know, they want to be able to play a Beatles song back in the 60s. It was a prerequisite to whether or not they were going to devote themselves to learning to play the guitar. They had to be able to walk out of their first lesson playing a song.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can take any student and have them playing a song, but it may not be the song they think it's going to be, merely because that song likely requires more technique. There has to be a certain amount of dedicated, devoted time to learning the skills of making the sound on the instrument, however that is done. Okay, whether it's drums or piano or guitar or trumpet or flute or saxophone, I don't care what the instrument is. The best way to teach a child or a beginner, you can be an adult too, is to teach them the fundamentals of the instrument.
There you go.
Now they have a foundation to build upon.
Right.
The performance comes at a time when a certain amount of skill is acquired. Now, the student that wants to tell me, well, let's say I take a student that has been studying for 5 years with another teacher, and I listen to the student play. I give the student sort of an audition to make an assessment of what the strengths and weaknesses are, if there are any.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there are none, or
right.
Sometimes it's all weakness. Rarely is it all strengths. And so, you know, my job as a teacher is to guide them along a path that's going to develop that fundamental ability, and then they can play any song, you see?
You got it.
Okay?
That's right.
So,
and ultimately play any instrument.
Yes. So it becomes an issue with the student of, I don't have the time. Okay, so I take 168 hours, which is in a week, and I subtract 8 hours of sleep. I'm going to allow them for 7 days to sleep 8 hours, whether they need it or not. Okay, and that leaves us with 112 hours. Now, the student that's in school, and he or she is in school for 5 days a week, and if I'm kind and I say, okay, let's say that you... in 5 days, you're going to school 8 hours a day. Most kids don't go that long, but let's say it's 8 hours a day, and I subtract 40 from that. I am left now with 72 hours. Okay, they have to go to church every week. And let's say that that's a two-hour service with a half-hour driving time, say 3 hours, okay? Now we're down to 69 hours. Bathing, eating, let's give them 3 hours a day for eating, okay? Even though they may not consume that much time, we'll give them 3 hours a day for the week. And that will amount to 21 hours taken off of 69, right? Okay, now we're down to 48 hours. And they may have travel time to school or travel time to church. Let's give them or extracurricular activities. Okay. Usually, if I even exaggerate the amount of time, to get to the point, what I'm doing is I'm being very generous in the amount of time that they devote to other things.
Right, exactly.
We've covered school, sleep, church, family duties, chores, things like that. Usually there's 40 hours left to practice.
Right. That's right.
Now, if we divide that by 7, each student is going to have an incredible amount of time, almost 6 hours a day that can be devoted to practice. And, of course, they're not doing all of these things to the extent that I've just described it, but I've given them that opportunity, right?
There's plenty of time. Just have to make sure you're not wasting any.
Now, that doesn't matter if it's an exercise program or it's something that someone needs to devote to get something done. It could be the chores around the house that are being neglected. And someone is living in filth because they are too lazy to take the time to clean. And they complain about the dirt and they complain about the chaos, the disorder. But it's merely another reflection of how they're responding to all the other programming that we talked about, right? The unnatural way of living, in other words, accepting all of these accoutrements that were offered as symbols of success and symbols of fun and entertainment and diversion from
right.
this, the struggle to make these corporations rich, to make
yep.
the government, to empower the government to be something, to be our protector and our savior and all the other things that they like to be.
That's right. That's the direction they steered us in very effectively. And we, on average, we went along with it, but it's wake up time. It's time to regain our sovereignty, our individual freedoms, our God-given rights to be healthy, and the right to own property and pursue happiness. And so we have to claim that as Americans. That's our divine right. It's our call to duty. And we can't shirk that responsibility because that's what's going on right now. We're being tested. We're simply being tested to see if we're worthy for greater blessings. This country was great and blessed. And then the Americans turned their back on the source of those blessings, thinking it was them. They bought the line coming from above. We're great. Look how modern, look how great civilized we are. No other civilization like us. And we know that's all nonsense from mm-hmm. our archaeological evidence. And so we bought the big lie in general, and we turned our backs on God. So God's testing us to see if we're really worthy to get the real gifts and blessings that he wants to bestow on his favorite people and his favorite country. And so if we continue to ignore our individual responsibilities and expect somebody else to care about us, if I expect a stranger's going to care more about my health than me, then I'm a fool. And I will deserve to lose my health because I will not assume the responsibility for my own health. And this is where we are in every respect. Health, jobs, food, and energy. And so all we need to do is assume this individuality that makes Americans so special. Individuality. No other country really ever had that like we've had. And we can't let it go. Individuality. The right for that individual to be free and to pursue his divine rights of being independent, prosperous by pursuing happiness and owning property. And that's only going to come about when we don't waste our time. Time is too precious. You know as well as I do, Don, because you're very involved with many activities along with your great music background. You're a great researcher. You got all kinds of things going. And you don't waste any time because there is not enough time in the day to do it all when you're so involved with so many activities. But it's all good activities. And then we find out we're trying to squeeze more time out of something else, maybe eating, so we have it dedicated for the activity that we're really into.
Being that's
productive.
True.
That's right. And so that's the mode we want more and more Americans to be in. Just saying, you know, I'm doing so much for myself and my family, being independent, that there's not enough time in a day. I'm trying to squeeze out some minutes or an hour here from other things, maybe eating or sleeping, just because I'm so productive doing all kinds of things, educating myself, reading, mm-hmm. studying, the exercises, whether it's physical exercises or your musical training, whatever it is, the fundamentals for your job, your career, whatever it is. It's never ending. Fixing things yourself. As you know, I just was working on my truck because mm-hmm. when they told me what they wanted to fix it, I said, okay, guys, I'm going to do it myself. You just gave me incentive. And it was very intimidating. I'm not a mechanic, but now that I finished that job, I am a mechanic. I had to take everything apart. I handled everything, put it all back together. I now know how to do it all. All the basic stuff, brakes, everything, rotors, ball joints, tie rods, U-joints, axles, done it all now just from this one job. And this is the initiative we all should have.
Yeah, and it's not because you were being a cheapskate about it. It was that what was being charged was very unreasonable.
It was a lot of money that I knew I'd rather spend on something more beneficial to me mm-hmm. than seeing it go into a machine that just could get banged up on the road the next time you drive out.
Yeah. Now, that's I hear right. people, when we talk about food here, and we're really out of time, but we'll take a minute or two more here. I run into people that say, you know, I don't know the first thing about growing a garden, growing food, my own food. I wouldn't know where to begin. Well, you're standing on the place where this will occur, number
right.
one. You know how to go out and buy things. You've done that your whole life. You get seeds in a variety of places. You are on the internet or you're reading magazines or you're reading things. Devote yourself, direct your attention to specifically that. Find out what the good seeds are. Talk to people that do grow things and find that out. Now, they can explain to you very easily. You could plant crops with a pencil if you know what you're doing.
There's really nothing to it, and it's amazing how many people today ask me, you know, how do you start that? Well, you get the seed. Well, what do you do with it? Come on now. What do you do with it? And this is really how sad it is for us as Americans, but you're right, Don. But just like you said earlier, like with any topic, it comes down to fundamentals. You're not familiar with the topic, not sure how to start, but you know how to read. Just get something that's going to provide you with the fundamental information, the basics, to get you started.
To cultivate it, right? And sure. Ultimately, when you are working with the dirt, you cultivate the dirt as well.
Yes, of course.
Dirt knows what to do, though. That's
it's a symbiotic relationship. The plant needs good earth,
mm-hmm.
And it also needs adequate, good quality water and adequate sunlight, quality sunlight, and proper temperatures, and you're on your way to growing food and anything else you want.
Yeah, and, if you like bananas and you're living in Alaska, don't expect to plant a banana tree outside and to have it survive, okay?
I hopefully don't think we have anybody out there that far gone.
Well, you would be amazed at what people expect to grow in certain areas because they like it. If there are some people that would plant pizzas if they thought they would grow. Or potato chips, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, box of cereal growing on a tree.
I got my beer garden in the back there, over there by the outhouse.
You know? Yeah, well, that's the beauty of this, is you appreciate where those products come from when you try to make it yourself.
Yeah.
All from scratch. Oh, boy, I miss my grandmother, how she made everything from scratch, you know? And when I was real young, and she lived across the street, and she was great, and she was a great cook. She had a restaurant when we were little. And so I planted a garden when I was only in my teens. I said, hey, Grandma, let me grow your tomatoes and stuff, because she was always starting from scratch, making stuff. She said, let me grow your own tomatoes so you make your own sauce. And she loved it. And I taught myself how to garden back then, just in her yard doing that for her. And it's very enjoyable when you reap the fruits of your labor. Oh, that's what living is all about. To see the end result in your hand after effort, time, struggle, work. I mean, you got to till up the yard. That's work. I used to do it by hand, just with a pick, for quite a while until mm-hmm. I got a tiller. But it's all worth the while when you're picking that nice ripe fruit and you're sharing it with friends and family, and it's so delicious, so healthy, all organic. It's just the best, and everybody loves it.
Yeah, and you see yourself over a time that you're eating this. If your goal is to lose some weight because you've been eating the wrong kinds of foods, you'll notice that with very little effort, all of a sudden your body responds to this food in a way that your health is better, mm-hmm. the allergies stop, or the aches and pains that you have, the arthritis, the rheumatism, skin problems, infections, and just the general sense of well-being and extra energy. All mm-hmm. of those things find their natural level, just like water seeking its own level.
Well, Don, it's so true that everyone that wants superb health, this is all they have to do to get it. Just connect to Mother Nature, use her foods, which build the body, make it strong, make it healthy, makes it solid, and you'll shed your excess weight if you have it. You'll mm-hmm. see your muscles show back up. You'll see your skin and tissue get healthy looking again and tight. That's what the foods from Mother Nature does, because she loves us. She gave us our bodies to clothe our spirit. And what bodies they are, even though we're mortals and we have imperfections that we acquired from our parents and they got it from their parents, but still it's very perfect. I mean, generally, health is the normal mode for everybody. Nobody's really born sick. It's very rare. It's only the parents' fault if it happens, because health is the natural order of God's creation. And so it's very easy to get healthy and feel great again just by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is discipline, because you have to give up the stuff that ruins the body, and you're psychologically you have a desire for it because of the habits that you created psychologically, but you just keep yourself disciplined and visualize what you want to look like, have the goal, know that this other stuff tastes good, maybe, smells good, maybe, but that's as far as it goes. It's not good for you in any other way. It's going to ruin your health. And that's what you, that's the information that keeps you going, so you don't consume it, you don't want it, and you just stay close to nature, and she will purify the body. You'll never miss that stuff again. Once it's out of the system, you're feeling great again, you're getting healthy, you'll never, you really won't miss that again.
And there's nothing more convenient than going into your backyard to grab a few tomatoes or some spinach or some lettuce or some beans.
Peaches and apples and figs.
Yeah,
everything.
All of that.
Grapes, all of that.
And you don't have to get in your car, and you don't have to drive in traffic, and you don't have to spend all that money.
Yeah, you don't even have to buy it.
Yeah. Paper or plastic?
Yes, exactly. Right. And it's gonna be loaded with life because it's ripened by the sun. You're not picking it out of your yard until it's ready to be eaten, until it's perfectly ripened. You can't find that in the stores, except in peak summer conditions when everything's in peak season, and then the stores have it. At a certain time, you catch it right, and it's abundant. But generally, everything in the stores are totally unripe. I don't really eat hardly anything from a regular store. It's just impossible. It's not ripe. But it always will be out of your yard, and it's free except for your sweat and your small investment of the seeds, maybe some natural foods, gas for the tiller, your time, your energy. But then the harvest makes it worth all that while.
I can recall people, especially when I lived in California, and I was doing a square foot garden to maximize the space that I had, and it was very prolific. And I would have people come and look at the garden. I would take the surplus of cherry tomatoes and pick out a neighbor every day. You're the recipient of the surplus.
Go.
And they would say, oh no, I can't take that. And they would say, how many tomatoes are there? Look, and they would make a comment, look at those market tomatoes, they're beautiful. And I said, market tomatoes? Those are my cherry tomatoes. You ought to come and see the market tomatoes.
Right.
Or, you know, the beefsteaks, the superboys, the big ones, two to three pounds.
Oh, yeah, they're tomatoes. I miss them already, Don.
Yeah, and so these people were just astounded. But you gain an understanding. You already have the understanding. It's when you put it into practice, when you make that decision, and then you make a commitment, and
honor the commitment. Honor that commitment. There's the rest of the task.
Yeah.
Honoring it so you follow through to the end. Whatever obstacles come your way to stop you from achieving that goal.
Yeah, you may have to pull some weeds. You may have to stand out there for 15 or 20 minutes making sure that all the plants get water. But there's even a correct way to water plants.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And there's a correct time to do it. There's a correct manner. You may have to pull some weeds. You may have to thin some plants out and spread them out over a wider area because they may be crowding themselves. But you learn to do these things, and then you instinctively know how to do it the next time. And you will appreciate it when people are standing in long lines wondering why they can't buy a loaf of bread.
You got it. You will be in such demand under those conditions when people are starving for food and they know, hey, he's growing everything right there in his backyard.
And these things are already occurring now, so.
Yes, food is the future. Quality food is the future.
Yeah, maybe the New Year's resolution for everyone might be something along the lines of liberating ourselves from this matrix. And doing the things that empower us and make us more capable of being who we could really be if we just stopped for a moment and thought about it and made our own decision for a change instead of allowing others to make it for us. Wouldn't you agree, Mike?
Absolutely, Don. And along with that, living life with love instead of allowing fear to dominate your mind. That's how they want you, so they can manipulate you and control you. You have to live with love and have feelings towards everything around you. I've got two pigeons in my back room that I've been nursing back due to a cat, and also the other one, I'm not sure what it was, but he's doing better. And why? Because I got compassion for him. Like, everything I come across, whether it's people and animals through the course of my day, if they need something that I can provide, whether it's information or something material, I'm glad to do it, knowing that I'm showing my commitment to life, because I don't take life for granted. I appreciate being here. I didn't create here. I didn't create this creation. I didn't create me. Somebody did all that, and I'm here. And boy, do I appreciate that. I don't take that for granted. And so if everybody were to start viewing life like this in this country, we'll get this country back on track so fast. We will disconnect the counterfeiters. They will eventually be held accountable if we can just get Americans to live this way. And then watch out, United States. You ain't seen nothing yet. We're going to become a mighty, powerful, great nation.
Okay, Michael. Well, we're out of time. I want to thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure as always, Don. Thanks for inviting me, Pat.
And Happy New Year to the West Coast now, too.
Absolutely. Happy New Year to your whole audience
and everyone else.
Prosperous New Year.
Yes, and you'll be with us more in January, so I'm looking forward to your next visit.
Thank you, sir. Me too, Don.
And I want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth is off tonight. Don's running the sound, so we want to commend him for the fine job he did getting us hooked up tonight. And to the listening audience out there, have a very happy new year. We're going to be broadcasting tomorrow. Our special guest will be Mr. Ken Adachi. And we've got lots of things to talk about, so be sure to tune in. Don't forget, January 6th, we have a special two-hour show from Europe with Michael St. Clair. It's going to be a very interesting show. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light. Happy New Year, and have a good night.